guys, and welcome back to another episode here of the Gold Coast Titans Frontline Podcast, the podcast that talks all things Gold Coast Titans, whether that be men's, women's, feeder clubs, which is the Ipswich Jets, who, even though Clarkie says didn't have a good season, had a great end of the season, as we spoke about last year, had a half-and-home season. Jeez, I'm far enough behind Ipswich, and except the only team that actually, you know, had something that we can really talk about so far this year. And then also the Tweed Head Seagulls. We've had a long year. We are now completed of rugby league football for the Gold Coast Titans season as an entire club. You're pumping home. You're loving to see it. We kind of get a rest now before, obviously, you know, next year when we have to go all again, which is what we do every single year. You just got to go again. My name's Blaze. I'm from BKR Sport, and I'm joined here, as we all know, by Dane from Clarkie's Rugby League column. Now, just before you do speak here, whereabouts in the Pacific are you? Because we're all here slaving away. We're here working hard, and we've got some bloke here on a cruise right now just living Barry's life.
All right, that's why I was looking out the window there, just trying to get my nautical bearing. My compass is, you know, away in the drawer at the moment with my navigation. You know, typically I like to do my navigation by the stars as well. So being daytime, difficult to tell. Likely back in Australian waters though, mate. Back in Australia tomorrow, or back in Sydney, I should say. And ready to gear up for another big weekend of football, mate.
Well, shame none of our Titans are here. But what I love here is that, you know, we had a comment on Facebook where someone was calling you a liar. They were saying, yeah, no, Clarkie is a liar. And I was like, and you said, yeah, he got me. Because, hey, guys, remember last week? Remember when Mr. Clarkie's Rugby League column over here was like, no, I didn't call you Blake. No. Well, guess what? You called me Blake. I put the edit in. I recorded it. And I went bang, bang, bang. I put it on repeat for like 10 seconds. So it was like, Blake.
I put my hand up there. Mate, even the greats slip up occasionally. You know, JT hit the post in the grand final there to win the game. The greats slip up occasionally, mate. All it was a minor slip up. Of course, I do love you as Blaze,
so but having another best... You're comparing Jonathan Thurston in the grand final. Cowboys have never won a premiership. From the furthest point of the stadium, he was nearly in Timbuktu. He was nearly on the same cruise that you're on right now, going for that conversion kick, and against his biggest rivals, and you're comparing Blaze to Blake.
Mate, the similarities are there. You know, when you get on a show with BKR Sport, I'm a huge fan, mate. It's a big deal for me. I slipped up. What can I say? I'll be better next time, mate. Let's jump straight into it, man, because we've actually got a fair bit of news here, which I'm excited to talk to you about. Quickly, before we get to that, guys, if you are new, everything Titans every single week. We don't stop in the off-season. So if you are new, please consider subscribing on YouTube, dropping us a like or 5 stars on the podcast and following us there. Also, first bit of news today, mate, Seth Nicotimo. He's going to depart the club. He's signed with Wakefield Trinity over in, I believe, one grade under the Super League at the moment. Your thoughts on us losing Seth and what we can expect from him overseas?
Yeah, look, I'm just going to mute my phone there. Sorry, guys. Today's a little bit of a muck around. Like, it's not a muck around podcast. We are still obviously talking about all the news and everything, the normal. But with that being said, you've got to remember that Clarkie's obviously on a cruise right now, so his internet may drop in and out, and we may be a little bit delayed to each other. But we still create content here. We still keep on pumping out the content. But yeah, look, in regards to Seth Nicotimo, I was speaking to him. There was rumours that he was going to the up Cronulla, the Sharkies. That obviously wasn't the case, and you know, look, he goes over there to Wakefield Trinity, which I'm really looking forward to. I was speaking to him and I was saying, like, look, man, you know, regardless of where you are, as long as you're not at the Broncos, you know, we really want to see all of our products succeed. And we really want to see, and even at the Broncos, like, obviously, that's just a joke. But he agreed with me. He agreed. Said, watching, I know. He agreed. Anyway, the point is that regardless of where you go, we just want to see the best of that person, that player, right? Because they are the human beings behind it. They are lovely boys and they do just want to have a successful career. And I don't think that Seth Nicotimo was going to get an opportunity really at the Gold Coast Titans here right at this very moment where, you know, we've got black rowers, you know, we've got Bobby Firma, we've got David Fifita, we've got Cleese Haas. So people keep saying, what's happening with his contract? Don't worry, don't stress. He's staying, right? You know, you go through and we've got, you know, Rama Howe is another one who's a lock, but also a back row, Jacob Alekwinki as well. You know, we've got a lot of back rowers here that have a little bit more experience and also just a little bit more progression in their career. Whilst, you know, Seth, you could actually compare a lot with Rama Howe because Rama Howe started off in Australia, went over there to, was it Castleford? It was one of the league. It was the league.
Featherstone Rovers, maybe?
That's the one. Yeah, Featherstone Rovers. Sorry, Castle Tigers. But no, the Featherstone Rovers, they were the ones that Arama went over to, did well, and then came back. And then obviously now is starting to pump along in his career as well. So it gives them that experience. It gives them a fresh opportunity. And also, the Super League is tough. You know, people do say the Super League isn't great and all this kind of jazz. Comparatively, quality-wise, yeah, sure, I'll agree with you. The NRL is light years above. But when it comes to toughness, when it comes to grit, and when it comes to mentality, I do think the Super League and the Championship and whatnot is really beneficial to these young players coming through, especially in the forwards. So, you know, best of luck to Seth Nicotimo there. And, you know, it's going to be good to have someone to watch in the Championship next season.
Well said, mate. And just quickly to note, if people are wondering why I'm swaying back and forth, I don't need to go to the toilet. It's just the motion of the ship at the moment. And on to Seth. Yeah, look, I just think, like, he's a young guy. He's obviously talented, but we do have a logjam of forwards now. So I've got no issues with a young fellow wanting to go over, play against men in a professional competition, get that experience. And we can only hope one day, once he's got that experience, we can be lucky enough to get him back, as he seems to really enjoy the Titans, grew up local junior.
He loves
so I would say if he ever is seeking an NRL, yeah, I'd say we would be his first priority if he was to come back. Second bit of news, mate. Talia Fuimaiano is now ruled out of the upcoming test due to sustaining a detached retina. So that was an eye injury she sustained against the Raiders. Obviously, we need to say all the best with the recovery. Super unfortunate injury. My question for you, though, on that bit of news is, did you have Fuimaiano in your Ocean side? Or do you think it's more likely we would have seen her representing Tonga?
True. I didn't even realise that she was Tonga. Because obviously her brother Tyrell Fuimaiono, I believe, may have played for them at one stage. Talia Fuimaiono, look, she hasn't exactly lit the world on fire since coming here. Great lady. You know, she's trying her best, and she was injured for the majority of... Actually, she was injured for the entirety of last season. I think it was like 20 minutes she got to play before getting a serious injury. And then this year, I feel like it's been one of those kind of coming-of-age injuries where she had to really adjust who she was as a player based off of that injury. And she hasn't exactly gotten back to that previous form that we know that she can achieve and be an origin player for New South Wales and whatnot and Australia and all that kind of jazz. So I think that Talia Fuimaiono, I don't know if she would have made the Australian side this year. I don't think that she has had that kind of season, especially with the Titans. The Titans in general, like our entire team in the women's game, has really, really been disappointing in 2024. There's context behind it. There's reason behind it. But also, that's just the fact of the matter that it wasn't a good season. We finished in third last. So, yeah, look, I don't believe that she probably would have been getting into that that Aussie team right now. However, I do believe that it's absolutely insane. And we'll probably talk about it in the NRLW recap. That wasn't a penalty try. That absolutely 1,000,000% is an 8-point try. As in, you score the try, you get the kick from where you score the try, and then you also get the kick from in front, because she did score it. She scored it, and then there was a penalty as well. So that's an 8-point try. The difference, for people who don't really know, is that if it's just a normal penalty try, it means that the person didn't score it, but would have scored it, which means it's just a 6-pointer, and that penalty will come from right in front to make it 6 points. Now, obviously, we did miss the kick from the line of where the try was, but again, we would have only been down by 6 rather than 8 had we gotten that kick from right in front. So, yeah, really disappointing from the officials in regards to missing that one, especially now that we definitely know that she's got a detached retina, which means that she's absolutely been hit high and she's absolutely been hit in the eye. Look, best of luck to Talia. I know that we all know that she's a very quality rugby league footballer. This wasn't her best year coming back from injury, but, you know, let's go bang next year.
And I think it's the thing with Fui is, like, just not enough game time. You know, leading into this NRLW season, she was underutilized by the Blues on the bench. The year prior, we didn't get to see much of her again due to unfortunate injury. So I actually think the best thing for Talia would have been to represent Tonga and uplift some of the other game's rising stars and be the starting 5-8 in there.
She would have played for Tonga. Sorry, I was just immediately thinking of Australia. She would have played for Tonga, yeah.
Yeah, so I agree with you, and I probably wouldn't have had her in my Australian side. I just think there's some more utility value that are in a slightly better form in those top four sides that probably would be there ahead of her. But Tonga will absolutely miss her. Our next bit of news here, mate, we probably don't need to talk about this one too much, but Avania Politi was named the NRLW Player of the Year for 2024. So both of us send our congratulations to her there. The next thing I want to ask you about, though, is Tuki Simpkins. He has signed with us on a 2-year deal, currently plays for the North Devils. Mate, I love this signing. What are your thoughts on it?
Mate, I was watching, I was streaming on BKR Sport, the North Devils versus Redcliffe Dolphins game the other day. That was a fun game. The North Devils were pretty comfortably in control the entire time. And it was because of guys like Tukumahia Simpkins that were chugging that line right up the middle. You know, they have an experienced guy in Jack Ahern that's not NRL level, but is a really, really good Queensland Cup player, host plus Cup player. Jack Ahern, you can always recognise him because he's bald and brilliant. He's bald and brilliant. That's how I look at him. He's just so recognisable there. You know, they have a really, really strong team, the North Devils. Fun fact for everybody, that's where like Greg Inglis came from. I actually watched Greg Inglis growing up because my dad lived at Toombull in that area. So, yeah, I don't mind a bit of the North Devils. And, yeah, they came over strongly. And Tukumahia Simpkins was a big part of that. The assist that he got for that try, like I'm spewing that he got tripped up because he nearly scored a try himself in this game. But the assist with the flick underneath to, I can't remember who it was for the Devils, but it was a really, really nicely worked play. And I think this is exactly what you need. And I need to remind everybody, everyone's saying RCG, which we'll talk about in a second, Regan Kimball Gillard and all that sort of stuff. But Desi's kind of signings aren't the big name players. Desi doesn't go out and sign your Payne Haas's, your Tina Fassil Malawi's, even though he's ours, you know, your James Mitchell Harris's and whatnot. He doesn't feel that's necessary. Desi Hasler has always, at Manly, signed guys that aren't necessarily big names, but will get a motor going and then become big names, and then people forget that they weren't a big name before coming. And I'm telling you that Simpkins is young. He's got a great motor on him. He is a pure Desi-style signing, similar to another one that we're talking about in a second. You know, he is a guy that is really going to help out depth-wise. I don't think that he's a starter for us. We've got Maui, we've got Jimmy, we've got Tino, but we've got someone now that absolutely can develop into what we need going forward. And we do need, you know, we've lost Aaron Clark now. He's gone. Isaac Liu, he's gone. We don't know what's happening with Joey Stimmo and whatnot. So, yeah, there's some real positive upside here to Tukumahia Simpkins, and I'm looking forward to what can come, because if that season for the Host Plus Cup where he won, I think, the prop of the year and also got that beautiful try assist in that game on the weekend, I tell you what, it's exciting stuff.
And that's what I love about this signing as well. Like, I will say, as Titans, we have been guilty in the past of probably signing players that have passed their peak. Guys like Zeb Tyre, Chris McQueen, forwards that are handy, and we need... Am I lagging or...?
No, I'm laughing. I'm laughing because I'm just thinking of all the names of exactly who represents what you've just said. Yeah, you're lagging a little bit, but it's completely exactly. Fine. But I'm just laughing at older players.
That's it. Now, I don't want to be disrespectful because we love everyone that puts on the Titans jersey, but we have been guilty of it, signing players that are slightly past their best. Whereas this time we've gone to reserve grade and we've said who has been the best in the lower competitions. And we're getting someone who has rep experience for the Māori All-Stars. And the only NRL experience we have off him as well is at the Tigers in a wooden spoon season. You know, there was a lot of forwards there, like Fanua Pole, Stefano Utuikamanu didn't look good that year for the Tigers. Thomas McKaylee, he's gone to the Cowboys now and had a strong season. There's so many young forwards at that stage at the Tigers who didn't look that great. And Tukey was probably one of them. But you look at what the others have done since. Fanua Pole is solid, as is McKaylee, and Utuikamanu has now played Origin. I think Tukey falls straight into that category where we've signed one of the best up-and-coming young props. He's got great leaders to learn off, such as Jimmy Choloff and, of course, Tino. So I'm super excited. The only thing I would caveat this signing is for our depth middle forwards in Tweed and Ipswich this year, it probably means Desi wasn't quite happy with what he saw and he thought he needed to go to the market. And if those players were to be coming off contract this year or next, it could be a wake-up call to them, like, okay, I need to lift my form big time. And hopefully that creates a more competition and makes everyone within our top 30 lift. So plenty of positives for that signing, mate. I want to quickly ask you, Tessie New, he was awesome in the grand final, man. He was player of the match, 2 tries, 2 try assists, 200 plus meters. Now, the Dolphins have outright said, we don't want you anymore. So I want to ask you, Tessie New is a depth option for us in the center and wing. Yes, only at the right price, or no?
So my answer is going to be no here. And the reason why I say no is because, yes, he did have a fantastic game. He dominated that game. I think he got a double, might have got a hat trick. It was incredible from Tessie New. But we've seen this all before. We've seen this before at the Host Plus Cup level where he dominates and dominates and dominates And then when it comes to the NRL, the game is just a little bit more pacey, or it's just very different, a lot more physical. It's a lot more quality, right? The Broncos, it didn't work out. The Dolphins, it didn't work out. I don't want their scraps. So what I say on Facebook and what I say on YouTube and whatnot is that when you're a club like the Titans right now, it's very difficult because you've got a fan base that are absolutely chomping at the bit for a little bit more success than what we've seen. And then we're also down, yeah, we're down there at the bottom. We're in a spot right now where we've got a good enough team to actually go and compete on paper. We've got a good enough team, Desi Hasler, Tino, Jimmy Jolliffe, maybe not on paper Jimmy Jolliffe because only we recognize him there. You know, Dave Fafita, you know, Kieran Foran, all these guys, Kevin Kinney, all these guys on paper, it just is brilliant. But when it comes to the actual product, it doesn't necessarily work out. So what I say is that you can't really, in our spot of thinking we're ready but not being there, risk it to get the biscuit on the scraps of other teams. The Tigers can go and do that because the Tigers, they're at rock bottom. So it doesn't matter what they do. They can just throw left, right, and center. You know, even I think that the only teams that like Tess and you, I would say, like if I'm the CEO or whatever, or the man in charge of the transfers and whatnot, is I'd say those teams around that 7 through 12 area, 7 through 11, 7 through 12, where you just need one extra piece. You're happy to risk it, but you've got a good enough team as it is that even if this doesn't work out, then sure, we'll still go back to this. So for me, I don't think that we're in a position where we can go for a player that would be classed as scrap heap. I'm not insulting Jesse New there. I'm just saying that he's classed as the scraps of other teams and then it doesn't work out and it just puts us and sets us back even further. So for me, no, but let me know what your thoughts are.
So I was very yes at first because Tessie knew someone who has a lot of upside. When he was in the Broncos as an under 15 in their academy, you have to log on the app 120 sessions per year just to say that you're getting through your reps. He logged like 500 plus, man. Like he has been a professional through his whole career. He's got international experience. But then I thought like we'd be spending money in our cap on a center that's a depth option with upside. And we kind of already have that with Harley Smith-Shields, I would argue. So I will say no, but if we were to go after testing you, I wouldn't be too disappointed. That being
would you
said,
not be, let's would you keep not it be worried, however, just sorry to interrupt you, but would you not be worried that you know he hasn't worked out at the Broncos or the Dolphins and then we're getting him to the Titans? It's like I understand Tukey is from the Tigers originally and then go to the Dolphins and whatnot, or sorry, the Devils, which is the Dolphins. They're both feeder clubs there. But would you not be worried that based off of his previous history, that it wouldn't necessarily work out with us?
The only positive I would say in that is I believe when he was at the Broncos, it was under Wayne Bennett, which was the same when he was at the Dolphins. And Wayne Bennett is a people appeaser and a man manager, whereas Des Hasler is a more look you in the eye, you're a professional, this is what I expect of you kind of coach. So maybe that's what makes Tessie New click as an athlete. I'm not sure, but that would be the biggest upside, I would say, a complete change of coaching philosophy. But yeah, I think Tessie New, he's in the breadbasket where if we sign him, good. If we don't, I don't think the world stops. But our phone, the front line is open, guys, if you want to leave us a voice message with your opinion on that potential signing. And let's talk two more potential signings, man. Now, nothing official here, but reports in the media, most particularly, I believe it's the Newcastle Herald, is saying Brody Jones is linked with us on a two-year deal. And Daily Telegraph, SEN Radio and Sydney Morning Herald are linking Regan Campbell-Gillard to us on what would appear to be a three-year deal. So I'll let you open up the floor, man, because those are two pretty cool signings if we get them. But what are your thoughts on potentially signing either?
Yeah, I think that Brody Jones is a pure style Desi signing. Like, that is just a Desi signing to a T. If I ever thought, hey, listen, Desi Hasler, what kind of player does he sign the forwards? Does he sign a Payne Haas? Does he sign a... who's a mid-ranger? Who would be a mid-ranger that you could think of there? I don't know. And then you've got like a Brody Jones who... Jensen. What was that?
Like a Corey Jensen, just to stay with the Broncos, I would say.
Yeah. To be fair, he's extremely underrated. But yes, I would agree with that. And then, you know, you go down to Bo Jones here from the Knights, who doesn't get a great deal of spot reps. He doesn't really get a great deal of time there at the Knights. But we do know he can work hard. He's a hard worker. Brody Jones is a very similar build and a lot of, not build as in body style, but he's a very similar build of a player as like a Chrissy Randle, where no one talks about him, no one knows him except for within. So it's in like the only people who actually know about them are Knights fans. And it's like, I'm glad that Chrissy Randle has got his, you know, flowers now at the Gold Coast Titans, because at the Knights, nobody knew about him really besides Knights fans. And now the Titans fans love him. And everyone loves him too and says, he's a damn well hard worker, man. And I think that Brody Jones is that perfect style mix as well, where he doesn't get the credit there. You bring him over here with Desi, who is just a real hard-nosed worker. And I can tell you right now, Brody Jones will work brilliantly. So I really do like Brody Jones if he was to come into this team. I couldn't see him starting. But with that being said, he's like a front rower, but like he plays a bit of 13 as well, doesn't he?
So he can cover middle, backs, and also like both firm, or he can slot into the centres if you need. But I would say his primary thing is a versatile forward that can play middle or an edge.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so look, I would actually like this signing. I think that it would be good, and I think we could get him for basement price. I don't think that we'd have to pay, you know, a big amount of money for a guy like Brody Jones from the Knights. And, you know, the last time we had a trade deal with them, Gregor Matsiu and Chrissy Randle, I believe 100%, 1,000,000% that we came out on top there. So if we did that with Brody Jones, I also feel like we would know how to come out on top there, because Stephen Mitchell, Dan Sport, Desi Asler, they all know what they're doing. I know people have their doubts, but I don't have my doubts. I'm confident in our team. In regards to Regan Campbell-Gillard, now this is a really intriguing one, because do I think Regan could work well with our team? Absolutely, I do. I think Regan Campbell-Gillard is a very, very good front row forward. I think he's a tough worker for the Eels and did it for the Panthers and whatnot. Does it for New South Wales I think he's played one game for Australia, maybe two games for Australia. The point is that Regan Campbell-Gillard is a really, really quality player that could work. But the issue is that we've already got so much money locked up in Tino. We've got a lot of money locked up in Moe. Not so much money locked up in Jimmy, but we're going to have to upgrade that when his contract does come to an end, because Jimmy has been incredible. So there's three big-time front row forwards. If you're signing Regan Campbell-Gillard, you wouldn't really be signing Brody Jones. And also, the RCG coming up here, for me, if we sign Tukumahia Simpkins, we're already thinking about the front row forwards there, which means Desi's thinking about that area, which is great. But he's also signed Simpkins. So does he go out in a time where we're stressing about our centres, in a time that we're stressing about our defence and the back line and whatnot on the edges, on the wings, Desi's focusing here. So it's like, does Des think that we just simply need to improve our middle? Sure, okay. But is he going to go out, sign Tukumahia Simpkins, RCG and Brody Jones when you've got Tino, Moe, Jimmy Jolliffe, Keenan Palacia, who, regardless of your thoughts on him, is still a front row forward at our club for this year? Someone was saying, oh, I think he will leave this year. I mean, not necessarily. Like, potentially, he could get offloaded somewhere, but I don't know if anyone's picking up his contract right now. He has to use next year as a big year for himself. So, you know, and then you've got Josie Pahulu. You know, we've got Josie Pahulu, Tino, Jimmy, Keenan Palacia, and also Mike Fodawaker. So, and then Simpkins. So now you've got RCG as well, and he's asking for 800K plus. 800K plus. So that means that you're in your front row forwards alone, you're probably spending nearly $2.5 million, because Tino's on over a mil. RCG's probably going to be asking for 800, 900K. And Jimmy Jolliffe is on probably maybe like 400, 500K. My Fodawaker probably about 7,657. So it's just too much. It's just too much for me. So I say no on the financials, but on the player style, would love it if it can work.
I'll keep it simple for Brody Jones. It's a big yes for me. If anyone disagrees, go back and look at his stats the last few games for the Knights. He finished this season in great form. And whether that's because he knew he was playing for a new contract or not, I don't know. But certainly if he brought that form to the Titans, along with his versatility, that is something awesome, because we do lose a bit of versatility with Aaron Clark, who does cover, back row, 5/8 hooker, a few different positions for us. Brody does that. On to Regan Campbell-Gillard. My initial thoughts are no, just based on that price packet. And I do see a lot of people in the Titans fan club and our frontline Facebook group saying, oh, if we can get him cheap. Look, that's just not the reality. You don't get released from the Parramatta Eels to go looking for a cheap 3-year deal. You don't do that. He would have sat at the Eels on 800K for this year and then gone to the Super League. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not realistic. we would need to be paying him 700K plus. And when you look at the top four teams from this year, we look at the Melbourne Storm. They have two elite front rowers, you could say, in Nelson, or maybe not Josh King, but then they've gone out and got Stefano. So that's there. And now they have two good front
just
rowers.
Just to stop you quickly. Just to stop you quickly good here. Josh Nelson, King, I would compare Stefano. I would compare Josh King very similarly to Brody Jones.
Yeah, he's one of those underrated players that gets through the work, right? Then you go to Penrith. So they've got their two. They've got their Tino and Mo in James Fisher-Harris and Moses Leota. And then they have some handy forwards, middles from the bench, such as Liam Henry and Lindsay Smith, which we have as well. The only side in the top four that has more than three elite middle forwards is the Roosters. And I think you'd say Waria Hargraves, Lindsay Collins, and Spencer Lanue. So I just look at that top four. And I think at the moment, those are the sides that are obviously managing the salary cap well and getting the results. They don't have three elite forwards for the most part. And the Roosters won't next year either, losing Jared Rea-Hargraves. So I think it would be mismanagement of our cap if we were to sign Regan Campbell-Gillard. As a player, rate him highly. Brings great aggression to everything he does. But for where we are, where we're at as a club now, with a salary cap to manage and other positions we're lacking in, I'm going to say no to Regan Campbell-Gillard, man.
I'm going to ask you a question here just to follow on from that before we do move on here. Is that obviously this is a sign that Desi is more so looking towards the forwards and he's not looking towards the backs and the halves. Do you think that that means that Desi is pretty confident in post-2025 without Kieran Foran, obviously Foster stays around as a coaching kind of staff for the halves. Do you think that means that Desi is very heavy believing in Carter Gordon, Jaden Campbell, / AJ Brimson in those halves, / Tommy Weaver, whatever? Or do you think that he's just waiting for a guy like Sammy Walker to come on the market next year, even though we can speak to him from November, mind you, but then it's coming off an ACL. But guys like that, or Ben Hunt, or this, because we're not really getting linked too much to Ben Hunt right now. We're not really. Like, we're getting kind of thrown in there a little bit, like a little dabble, but not really heavily like we would normally get. Like, oh, they're signing 100%, then nothing happens. So what do you think Desi is thinking right now, off your personal thought process? Is he going with that side, or is he going with that side? Do you think he's confident what we've got, or do you think that he's just waiting?
So I look at when Dez won those premierships back at Manly in 2011 with DC and Kieran Foran in the halves. And yes, we are now 14 years on when it comes into next season. And rugby league has changed in the way that the game's played. But fundamentally, how you set up your two halves hasn't changed. You want a running 5/8 and you want a controlling number 7. I don't want to put too much pressure on Zane Harrison, but I suspect Dez is looking at him and going, okay, that's my daily Cherry Evans, remembering DCE won a premiership in his rookie season. And I think he looks at either Carter Gordon, AJ Brimson, or Jaden Campbell and says, okay, that's my Kieran Foran. That's my ball running half. So for those reasons, that's why I think Desi is not too fussed to go out and put a Band-Aid patch on. Like, we could sign, I don't want to name a player to sound disrespectful, but we could put a Band-Aid patch on and sign a player that's slightly above our current half stocks. But I don't think Desi sees the point in that, right? When he sees a clear pathway. Would you agree with that process?
Yeah, 100% I agree. I forgot, I didn't even think about Zane Harrison for a second there, because we do have Tommy Weaver on the books, Tanner Boyce on the books, and then also Jaden Campbell, AJ Brimson, Kieran Foran, and Carter Gordon. So we've got a whole heap of options there. So yeah, I feel like, and that's the thing with fans, like the fans are always going to be looking for the next best thing regardless. Like, it's, they don't, a lot of people, and this is not me insulting any fans in specifics or general or whatnot. It's just me saying, as the generalization, people don't really think about, and they don't actually watch enough of the, you know, depth of the tweet or Ipswich or anything like that to really know kind of what the plans are. Because I was going to say, like, I do genuinely believe that Dez is pretty content with their half situation. I think he's content. I think he's content with the 9. By the way, just a reminder, Sammy Verrills is signed until 2026, the end of or whatever. So, like, he's not going anywhere. I think that maybe Dez could still tinker with that, the centres, but I don't think so, because I think he's pretty content there too. I think that this, with us being linked to Brody Jones, RCG, and signing Simpkins, it's a clear sign that Dez doesn't care about the back line right now, because we've got a good enough back line. It's about tinkering that within. But he does want to really fix the depth and the bolster of the options of the forwards so that we can get a real good motor on. So I think this is a clear sign of what Desi's thought process is right now.
And once we do build what you're saying there with Dez, and let's say Zane Harrison does come in the next few years and he's partnered with a running half like AJ, Gordon, or Jaden Campbell, and continues to build the forward pack, like you said, there's actually a lot of like you can almost match that to the game plan he had at Manly back in the 2010s. You know, he had the same halves as what he's looking to build. He had a powerful forward pack and an explosive fullback. And an explosive fullback in Brett Stewart, which we have with Keanu Kinney. So, you know, I know it's hard to kind of paint that vision now for people because we did think that that was going to start occurring this year. But I hope that our listeners, even though we kind of got it wrong thinking this year would be our year we take off, I hope that they can also appreciate the vision that we're kind of picking up as well behind the scenes, which is exciting, mate. Alrighty, let's talk about something not so exciting. Let's talk about our NRLW recap. I will kick us off here, mate. Look, first of all, unfortunately, both our predictions from last episode were correct. We lose to the Raiders 16-12 at CommBank Stadium. And here's my first thought, and I really do mean this respectfully, and I said it for our NRL season as well. Thank God it's over. For different reasons. Now, the NRLW is more so the disappointment we feel because we were in the grand final last year and we had so many injuries in a shortened season, whereas the NRL was kind of because it did drag on and we knew we were out of finals contention. So I mean it respectfully to both of our teams, but it did feel like a bit of a drag for me as a fan. So I'm not picking and choosing with that comment. Thank God it's over, I would say to both. Let's start with the first minute, mate. Soliola scores a try. Now, okay, we conceded a try in the first minute. You know, let's come back. But let's look at this a bit deeper. We conceded a try in the first minute against the Knights. The week before that, the Eels scored 3 minutes in. The week before that, the Sharks scored 4 minutes in. So we go all the way back to round five, halfway through the season, when for the last team that didn't score a point on us in the first 5 minutes, and that was the Roosters, when we smashed them at home. Now, I don't want to labour on those points, but I'm sure everyone would agree with me. That's not good enough. You can't be conceding that early. Goal kicking, another obvious issue. Without Lauren Brown, it was three tries all. We weren't worlds apart from the Raiders. We were pretty close, actually. But we just kicked Owen three. Need to improve there as well. All in all, I will say we did compete well in this game. And you look at the stats, and that definitely leans toward that thought process. We had less errors, less penalties, half the missed tackles, more attacking kicks, more forced dropouts, faster ruck speed, longer average set distance, more tackle breaks, more line breaks, more post-contact meters, and more meters. I ran out of fingers there in the end, mate. That's how much that's how well we competed, to be honest. Now, it's a game we should be winning. And if we have Lauren Brown there, we win absolutely, hands down, no questions. But, like, Lani Montgomery is not a seven. She's just not, you know, she was a fullback. She played a little bit of 5/8. She's not that kind of game manager that we needed to win this game. And so I'm not disappointed with Montgomery. She's out of position. She did her best. Like, you know what I mean? She did her best, but she's just not a seven. All in all, I'm not disappointed with the loss. I thought we played well enough. And because our season was over anyway, that's why I'm not disappointed. If this was to play finals and we lost, I'd be like, how do we win in 11 different stat categories and lose? But I can live with it, mate, because the effort was there. We competed well. Did you see it in a similar way?
Yeah, look, it was definitely disappointing. Don't get me wrong, but we've all checked out, and we all checked out weeks ago, and that's the honest truth, and that's inclusive of the players. You know, it doesn't mean they're not trying their hardest, man, but, like, at the end of the day, if you're not playing for anything, then, you know, you're internally checked out. And I do think that the girls did try very, very hard in this game to win it. I do think that we got very unlucky that we weren't given a penalty try, which would have brought us within six rather than being eight. And that changes the entire mental capacity of where that game is at that point. It can completely change. You know, people don't... Anyway, there's a lot that goes into that. But point is that, yeah, it was definitely disappointing in a lot of ways because we should have won this game. I do believe that we let it get away from us early. We were down, 12-0 or 10-0 very early doors before we scored right before halftime through Serena Masunga. And I do think that if I want to get into a positive here, I think the positive and benefit of our season this year is that we've been able to unearth a talent like Serena Masunga because she has been really good, especially in that Eels game down there in Parramatta. You know, in this game, she was pretty decent, you know, ran for, 150 metres, I think it was, and made a few good tackles and ran for 124 metres with 50 post contact, a line break, and obviously scored a try as well, and 12 tackles with one miss. So, yeah, I thought she was really, really good. But, look, overall, the season has been done. We're glad that we can have a bit of a kickback now. Overall, the entire club has had a really, really down year, but, you know, it's just setting us up for greatness next year when we get all our players, like Destiny Minnesota Party, when we get Lauren Brown. But I will say, that there is a lot of conversation that will be had pre-season next year, because next year is a contract year for pretty much everyone, because the NRLW is a very different contract situation to the NRL. So next year, all these girls are going to be playing up. They're going to be playing up to make sure they get their contract and whatnot. I do think Karen Murphy is ready to adjust this team in ways. And, you know, I will say this publicly. I always get concerned with Georgia Hale because she's one of our best players, if not our best player. And she's obviously, she wears Warriors jerseys and whatnot on her socials. So I feel like I'm kind of preparing myself at this point, because you're looking at all these signs for the Warriors. By the way, Bulldogs are in shambles. They're not signing anybody for next year, because just if you guys didn't know, the Warriors and the Bulldogs are getting the women's team next year. And then I think Manly and Panthers was Manly and someone the year after. Anyway, the point is that she's always wearing like Warriors kits. So I'm like, okay, I'm just like preparing myself for the ultimate, you know, heartbreak of Georgia Hale signs with the New Zealand Warriors any moment now. So just kind of be careful, guys, of getting too attached right now. Like, obviously, support her, love her, get around her. But I just am always keeping an eye out for it. But yeah, back to this game. In regards to this game, whatever. You know, we didn't come last. We didn't come first. Let's just move.
And we'll do a full NRLW breakdown of the season. But one thing I will quickly preface that episode with that will be coming is I'm really excited for Riley Augustson to have an uninterrupted preseason where she's not injured leading into the season. And Marina coming off the bench. Those two coming off the bench would be huge next year for us and inject a ton of momentum. So that'll be a positive.
You said Marina. Season, who's Marina?
We'll talk about Marina Sarunga.
No, so, you're close. Serena Masanga. So the opposite, the letter, you just switch the S and the M. So you just switch the first letter of the first name for the first letter of the last name.
I will blame the seasickness for that one. My apologies there. Let's stay on positives though, man. Let's go 3-2-1s. I'll let you go first with your 3 points. I've already locked mine in, but who is going to get your three?
I'm going to go Chapo. I thought she's had a relatively disappointing year, but she has also been injured for the majority of this year, much as a muchness of our entire season in general with the women's team. But Chapo had a great game, 176 run meters, 71 post contact. She had 11 tackle breaks, which is just insanity. 11 tackle breaks is wild. She had 5 dummy passes in this game, mind you, 13 tackles, no missed, and did not have. She had a couple of errors, but overall, I thought Jamie Chapman was incredible. 11 tackle breaks is no easy feat, especially against a Raiders team that, although they're not that good right now, like they do know how to lay in a solid tackle, man. You look at their player list. Appy Nichols is a quality, solid fullback there that can lay in the tackles. Zahara Tamara is one of the stronger halfbacks or halves in the league. Sorry, the 5'8", but stronger halves. You know, even Ashley Quinlan is as well. Monalisa Soliola, she's a big bopper. Simone Taufa is one of the heaviest hitting forwards that you're going to meet. And this Raiders team, they just are a really, really strong team to come up against. And I can tell you what, like the 11 tackle breaks they have for Chapo is really, really good. So, yeah, look, I love that from Chapo, and I'll give her the 3 points.
My 3 points is going to go the way of Georgia Hale, who potentially I've been guilty of overlooking at times this season. But again, this year, she had 41 tackles for zero missed. That is awesome. Like, I don't need to see any other stats. It's there every week. I just wanted to be very careful not to overlook her. So my 3 points goes to Georgia Hale. That same effort has been there every single week. And she is just a leader through her actions on the field. And even though we didn't finish higher on the ladder this year, she should still be a contender for Captain of the Year, because she truly leaves it all on the field and leads by her actions every single week. So my 3 points goes Georgia Hale, mate. Who gets your 2 points?
Yeah, my 2 points goes to George. Yeah, no, she's fantastic, man. That's why I'm scared. You know, I'm a bit scared here, man. I do not want to lose Georgia Hale, please. No, I do not want to lose her. So I am. That's why I say my concerns there. But yeah, incredible, man. You know, 5 tackle breaks as well. 82 running meters, which is pretty normal for George. But 41 tackles, no missed, is just when you're getting beaten, whether it be by a big margin or small margin, if you're missing no tackles, that it means that it's just simply not you that is the reason for the loss there or the tries getting scored. So, yeah, I give Georgia Hale the 2 points there. I thought she was fantastic.
Not to be boring, but my 2 points goes to Jamie Chapman. So we've just swapped our threes and twos there for all the reasons you said. 11 tackle breaks is, it would be close to a season high in the NRLW, I believe. That is absolutely incredible. And it just really shows that even though she's been injured this year, she is still such an attacking threat. And I think that she used this game as a final opportunity to say, hey, I've been injured in the NRLW this year, but Australian Kangaroos do not forget what I'm capable of. And I think she'll still be there in the centre or the wing. And this was her final exclamation mark for mine. So she gets my 2 points. Who is going to get your 1 point?
My final 1 point of the season. There's a couple of players here that I could see. You know, there was, I didn't mind Serena Masanga. You know, I didn't mind Jess Elliston. I thought she was good as well. But I'm actually going to go to a woman here who did not necessarily have the greatest stats if you look at it at a pure stats level. But on the eye test, I thought she played a really good game. I think she has been a really quality player this year, and that's Lily Rose Colk. I thought that her playing at the hooker, you know, she only played the 36 minutes here with the 68 metres and the one line break as well. She had two tackle breaks in this game and defensively had 20 tackles for no miss. So she's a nice little hooker there that does play well out of dummy half. She gets some good defense going. I didn't mind her attack. She had some quick little scoots. And yeah, look, overall, I thought Lily Rose Colk on the eye test was really, really good. So I don't necessarily believe that Lily Rose is a starting hooker, but I think that she's a brilliant 14, is what I would say. I wouldn't say that Lily Rose would be my style for a 9 starter, but I think that she absolutely is the perfect 14 for us. And I think that she deserves the 1 point from this game.
Yeah, great call there. And you also called her for Rookie of the Year, which I think is likely at this stage. So interested to see who officially wins that award. I don't think it's been announced yet by the club. My 1 point went to Jessica Elliston. We always talk about her and Shannon match each other and one has more run meters 1 week next. Well, Jess has done it. It took a lot of this season, actually. Last season, it was that they would swap week to week. But she had the most meters for our team and the most post-contact meters for our team. So awesome game by Jess. She locks in my 1 point. And I can tell you guys that next episode, we will be revealing our season MVPs, what we're calling the frontline's finest. We've got physical medals that Blaze is going to endeavour to get to the winners and hopefully he can get a picture with them as well. So what we're going to ask you at this stage of the podcast is please do a phone the frontline. Let us know your season awards. Who do you think is the most improved? Best player, best signing, best back? We want to hear it all because we want to do a dedicated episode to that. And I think, Blaze, this is probably a good time for us to let everyone know that although we have no more football in 2024, we do have some great content coming up on the podcast. And I know your connection is a lot better than mine right now. So I'll get you to read out all of the upcoming episodes we've got planned in no particular order, please.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So, yeah, just as his internet's fine, it's just a little bit delayed. So that's why you just need to kind of figure that out here today, guys. It's fine. At least you can hear him well. But in regards to what we're planning for this offseason, we've got the award show, as Dane just mentioned, which is the Frontline Finest Medal winners at NRL and NRLW. Yes, I am going to do my best to meet up with... I nearly said the I almost said, because I know who's won both of them right now. He doesn't. I do. But I think most people can have a pretty good guess in regards to the men's, but the women's one's close, man. I will tell you this. The women's one is close. And then we're also going to go to the best forward, back, rookie, try, atmosphere, all the jazz. We're also going to do, as you guys know, the Gold Coast Titans draft that we did last year. But we really want to get a listener in this time. So myself versus Dane versus one of you. So if you are confident in front of a camera and can talk in front of a camera and also you're very well aware of the Titans and can do your list and all that type of jazz and know all the history of the club, then please message either myself or Dane, or we'll put a post up on our Facebook group, the Gold Coast Titans Frontline Facebook group. Please let us know, but you have to be confident in front of camera. You know, if you can't do it on a camera shot video, then unfortunately we won't be able to grab you on, but it will be good. Three teams at once going, and we select the best players for our teams and whatnot. It's good fun. There's a Titans draft from last year if you haven't seen it already. A full season breakdown and review. Obviously, you know, we're going to slap that down. There's going to be so much analysis that's going to go through there when he's obviously back from his cruise. Every player graded from an F to an A-plus for the season with explanations. We'll go through every single one for the men's and the women's. Backs, forwards, from both sides there. We'll do a Remember the Titans. So we did this a little bit last year. I think we only did one episode of it. But you flash back to the players who helped build our club and remembering the moment. So basically, we go back over the history of the club. We'll do a randomizer and a player will come up and we'll figure out kind of what we want to talk about and just get a good memory from them, bad memory, just a memory from that player in general, regardless of who it is. We're going to do a building a GC Titans first, second, and third all-time list. Which the third team is going to be interesting there, that's for sure. But we'll do the first, second, and third all-time list. There is potential for player interviews. So I, as a couple of guys, I'm very close with Foz. I'm going to put that out there. We more than likely will be able to get him on. But it just comes down to the fact that I'm going on break to Fiji to see my daughter. You know, he's got his break. Foz is having a bit of a break from everything as well whilst internationals are on and whatnot until the preseason goes back. So we probably are looking towards more of the later off-season for those ones there. A rivalry breakdown of the competition and tier ranking them. Head-to-head trivia nights between us. Last time I slapped him. Last time I slapped him, Jan. Slapped him. That was close. It was a good one. He did get the Indigenous question. He did get the Indigenous question, which was impressive. Kind of, sort of, not really, but you got it close enough. We got the 2025 roster analysis, when we're stacked or short, where we're stacked or short, plus potential signings. 2024 Titans merch review on a team maker. Well, the shirt that we're right now, I'm ranking that a 10 out of 10. I'm ranking this one 10 out of 10 because we made it. Or he made it. Then we've got the Titans what-if scenarios, explaining how our club could have changed without key decisions being made. That's going to be an interesting one, especially in regards to Chezza and also Jared Haynes. So those will be real. Go on.
That's what I was going to ask you. Off the top of your head, what do you think the first one is we're going to talk about? And my mind goes straight away to Jared Haynes signing in 2015, I think it was. And yeah,
2016.
Changed the direction of our club. 16.
Yeah.
We changed the direction of our club in a big way. We lost six players.
But it's 2014 with Cherry Evans as well, where we, you know, lost Aiden Caesar. We lost a couple of players there. And then, 2016 with Jared Hayne, you know, losing about a billion players. And then eventually losing our coach, Neil Henry. So anyway, we'll get into that one. See, we're already getting angry. But we'll get into those ones, the Titans what-if scenarios. We're going to see. We don't know if this could work because it might be copyright and whatnot. But we're going to try and do a live watch party of like a classic game with us on YouTube. So basically, you can watch the older game live with us. It just comes down to if we can do it without getting copyright and whatnot. But we'll see how we go. And then obviously, we'll do a Phone the Frontline Q&A dedicated podcast where we just talk with you guys the entire time because you guys are interesting as well. You know, your opinions are just as valuable as ours. We just have a public presence. That doesn't mean that our opinion is more important than your opinion. It just means that we know how to speak about it publicly, I guess, more so. So shoot those Phone the Frontline through the description link and whatnot. Get around it and fire it up, baby. Fire it up.
That is probably the best point there to call this episode, guys. As Blaze said, plenty of content still coming for you guys, even though it's the off-season. Even if you're on the seas, on the Gold Coast, recording from Canberra, we get it done. That's what we do. We get it done. And, of course, we're looking forward to our big show next week where we will announce the Frontline Finest Winners, the inaugural Frontline Finest Winners. And we hope that that continues to be a cool trend over the next decade or so at the club. So, Blaze, for the final time with a game to review in 2024, are you ready to zing it up?
Yeah! Get around, Blaze! Zing, zing, zing. See you next week. Zing.